Hi, welcome back. This is Chicken Philosophy, the secret of the golden flower. Part 4. I hope everyone's doing well, and hopefully we'll get past the introduction today and actually start with the translation. Just got back from the beach. That was fun. And decided to record while there was still a little bit of light, but while I was setting up, the light went away. So now we got this light again. I mean, I say again for the benefit of the people who are watching more than just one series on this. And I just want to get this out of the way. I know there's one person clicking dislike on every one of these videos. You can click the little three dots in the corner and click don't recommend this channel. That'd be great. I think that you would be happier that way. Go ahead, click dislike, click away. All right, bye. Okay, now that they're gone. Yes, so last time we began, or somebody began, whoever that was, began a new tradition of throwing I Ching. Is that the proper way of saying that? I'm not sure. And used a yuan coin. Today I'm using a 1/100th of a yuan coin, so like a Chinese penny. I don't know what that's called, but do please feel free to let me know in the comments. And I've mentioned it before on this channel, but my dad was born in Shanghai, China, and all of his furniture and statues and everything, his whole personality at home anyway, was very much, you know, Chinese. I mean, what he considered Chinese. So my concept of China from the time I was born until I was, you know, in elementary school, meeting Chinese-American kids that were in the class with me, was by way of my dad, who, of course, left China when he was 6 months old. And so all of his idea of it was seen through the eyes of his mother, who lived there in the 1930s, mostly. She was in Russia before that. His father passed away when he was 6 years old. He might have remembered some early memories of his dad talking about living in China. He lived there for longer, 20 years. His mother lived in Russia before that, and then her husband passed away, and he was a friend, well, a colleague of my grandpa. And she ended up in Shanghai. I don't know all the details. I know some details. There's a book called The Lady on the Panda that mentions a little bit.
Dan Reeb. He explained that because he had so many years in Western China, he thought he might be of some help. He had spent months on end living in faraway places that no other foreigner had ever penetrated. He had even been captured, tortured, and held for ransom.
So anyway, this, I can only assume, was something that my dad bought in Los Angeles, Chinatown when he was 10 years old. Or it might be something that my grandpa brought back with him, or my grandpa and grandma brought back with them from China when they had to flee because of World War II, basically. And so this has been in my, ever since I was a baby, this has been somewhere on a shelf. And so I'm living in India now. So this is, of course, one of the things, precious things, small, precious, subtle things that kind of live in the background space of my office here. And this, when I went on a pilgrimage to Shanghai, like a personal ancestral pilgrimage, just to see where my grandpa lived and where my dad was born. And I got to see Longchenpa, I believe. Is that what it's called? This. And of course that music was Jean-Michel Jarre's concerts in China. He's a French musician, and he went to Shanghai and I believe other places in China and played music. And was very excited about it, and I used to listen to that music. And there were a lot of things. I'm rambling, I know, I'm sorry. I'll get to today's reading, I promise. But my dad had a lot of this like particular type of furniture, this old style furniture, usually dyed with like a cherry wood, or you know, or like a deep brown. Anyway, he said it reminded him of Imperial China, as opposed to, you know, what they used to call Red China. I think that's like not a polite thing to say anymore, but you know what I mean, like post Mao, you know, China. So he was fond of the good old days. Like in movies, they depict those days as being. I think they do something with the filter. I mean, they used to do this, where everything was very brightly colored and ornate, and there was a lot of music and a lot of like interesting things. And then there was the time period, 1948, 49. From that point forward, everything is gray, except for the green uniforms and the red stars. I mean, this is for historical films, of course. Empire of the Sun, right? And Ip Man, and a few others come to mind. Maybe not Ip Man, but anyway, okay, I'll stop talking now. I'm just letting you know I'm not just some random white guy that's like, I'm gonna read this. Like, no, this is actually kind of my background. When people say, stick to your own culture, and it's like, well, my culture is white people who were obsessed with Chinese culture, so you want me to have someone else's culture? You know, like, sorry if you don't like where I come from, the environment in which I was born and raised. At least on my dad's side. My grandma did her best to try to save my soul from my evil, satanic, Eastern-oriented father. And so I got a little bit of the Lutheran injection once or twice a month growing up. But yeah, the majority, the bulk was this stuff. Am I talking too much? Yes, I am. I'm going to flip the I Ching. And by the way, there was one time. Sorry, I said I was going to get started with the reading, wasn't I? It didn't I? There was one time I was like 7 years old, and my sister's boyfriend at the time was like, you think you're smart? And I'm like, yeah, because everybody said I was smart. Yeah. It's that generation where they told their kids, oh, you're naturally gifted. And so I thought I didn't have to work at it. And that was kind of a problem. But anyway. So he says, okay, what's 2 plus 2? I said, 4. He said, what's 4 plus 4? I said, 8. He said, what's 8 plus 8? I said, 16. He said, 16 plus 16. I said, 32. He said, 32 plus 32. I said, 64. He said, 64 plus 64. I said, 128. He said, 128 plus 128. And I said, 256. That was kind of, I capped out, but I was like very proud of myself at that age. And anyway, so given that the I Ching is made up of basically ones and zeros, right? Binary code, anyone? A six-digit binary code number. The highest, or the total amount of numbers you can reach with six digits in binary code is 2 to the power of 6, right? 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, 64. So, I don't know. This book that we're reading is this thick. I don't know if we're going to make it to 64 episodes. But one thing I can try to do, at the very least, is not repeat the I Ching symbol that we divine at the beginning. So, if we get a repeat, then we'll note that, okay, well, that's what was intended. But for the sake of learning, I will intentionally make it a different one. So let's see how this goes. We've got Unbroken. All right, so it's not going to be a repeat. Broken. Broken. Unbroken, unbroken, unbroken. One moment, please. Okay, so that's Ken, meaning mountain, on top, those top three, and Qian, meaning heaven. And I apologize for my poor pronunciations, which is figure number 26, which is da-da-da-da. I'll get there. Sorry, bear with me. Yes, it is Ta Chu, the taming power of the great. And the short description is, in the face of rising tension, keep still. Honor in practice what you have learned from the I Ching. Which I admit isn't much so far, but we're starting so far. All we learned was Tai piece last time. So, okay, let's make that a little smaller, put it up there, and let's finally get to the reading, shall we? Hope everyone's doing well. And I think if I know Editor Edward, he's probably already playing some music. So I won't tell him to play any music because that would be redundant. From this point on, okay, so we're reading the introduction to by Wilhelm Friedrich Wilhelm, right? Yes. Okay. From this point on, a certain break in the sequence of thought in our essay becomes noticeable. On the one hand, the cultivation of the golden flower is further described. On the other hand, there appear purely Buddhist ideas which repudiate the world and emphatically shift the goal towards nirvana. Vairocana, you want to take a bow? Where were we? Then follow several sections which, considering the spiritual elevation and coherence of the work as a whole, have scarcely more value than gleanings. Moreover, the work towards an inner rebirth through the circulation of the light, in quotes, circulation of the light is in quotes, and the creation of the divine seed kernel is described only in its first stages, although the later stages are named as the goal. Parentheses, compare the Hui Ming Ching of Liu Huayang, where these later stages are more carefully explained. End parentheses. Therefore, we cannot escape the suspicion that a portion of the manuscript has actually been lost and substitutions made from other sources. If that is so, it would explain the break in continuity and the inferior quality of the parts not translated here. An unprejudiced reading will, however, disclose the fact that these two sources, Taoism and Buddhism, do not suffice to cover the whole range of thought. Confucianism, in the form which is based on the I Ching, is also introduced. I'm having nostalgic flashbacks. Both my parents passed away when I was a teenager, and I remember this incense. It's a Japanese incense, but it's giving me flashbacks to the day when I went over and grabbed this. I'm oversharing today. I'm sorry. It's something I do sometimes. The day that I got this little statue, I remember going to Chinatown, Los Angeles. Is it Broadway? With my mom and walking around. It was after my dad had passed away. So it was kind of an interesting thing where my parents weren't fans of one another. They were divorced. And, you're just like your father was something my mom would say when she was really angry, you know. And then my dad passed away when I was 15, and she wept as much as I wept, and I was thoroughly confused through the weeping, you know. And then after that, I wanted to get in touch with all the stuff that I felt that I had lost, to get into tarot cards more, and to get into the occult, and to get into Chinese things, and all the things that sort of defined my dad and made him weird. I wanted that weirdness. I wanted more of that weirdness, you know. And she was right on board with me, and she was helping, you know, like she would say, "Oh, well, your father used to say this." I remember back in 1973 or 1975, 1979, they had a great relationship in the 70s, right up until I came around. What does that say? I don't know. Nothing, probably. Yeah, so I remember we went to Chinatown so that I could be nostalgic about all my dad's little trinkets, and I got this little statue of Confucius. Among other things, I got some foo dogs, which I don't have anymore, but I got some other foo dogs. I think I got them. I don't know. I don't know when I got them. Well, anyway, yeah, they're over there. You see them sometimes in the Buddhist Books podcast if you look closely. I'll throw in a video. Yeah, I took that after I filmed this. I do that sometimes. It's the magic of movie editing. Anyway, Confucius was mentioned, so he's here now, present with us. And if you were wondering, I am in this place. And this is some nice black coffee. Sometimes I read the book that, you know, I'm supposed to read in the episode, and other times I do this. It's something that happens on Chicken Philosophy. I will get back to it, though. Oh, hey, speaking of, this was actually my dad's. It just happens to be right here, and since I'm sharing all this stuff, this was my dad's Dorje. And one of the rules, there were a few rules in the house. One of the rules was don't take the strings off the Dorje. And I think the black one used to be blue, and I actually remember when it was blue. But this is old. The Dorje itself, I think, definitely was something that my grandpa brought back with him. So he probably got this in the 20s or something, in Western China. And yeah, my dad, when he met the Karmapa, there was a point, not the young guy, the older guy, the 16th Karmapa came to California. And Kes Fry, I always like to give Kes a plug. He's the one who, you know, gave my dad this book. Brought my dad to meet, I think you're supposed to say His Holiness the 16th Karmapa. And according to the story that was passed down to me, the Karmapa blessed this Dorje and put the strings on the Dorje. So the 16th Karmapa's hands touched these strings, and my dad taught me to use the Dorje like this. And there was a time when my mom was doing what I was just doing. For the people on the audio, hello, I haven't forgotten you. I was pointing it at my third eye, like you've seen nobody do ever. Never really seen that in any kind of artistic rendering of someone with a Dorje. They're usually doing something more like this. But anyway, that was what Andrew de Pisano taught my dad. So yeah, my mom was pointing it at her third eye, and she was flipping through a book, and she saw a picture of the current Dalai Lama when he was a little younger. And she thought, "Oh, he has a very kind face," and felt this like thunderbolt go through her head. And she threw the Dorje across the room. So that was one of those fun stories I grew up with. I don't know. My parents were a little bit, I want to say fruity and new age. Is that okay to say? I'm not talking, it's not like a derogatory toward anything, but new agers when I say in this context. Never mind. But, you know, it's where I come from. Part of my roots. What can I say?
I do not like the term New Age.
Okay. This is all about me, right? Where were we? Yes, Confucianism. In the form which is based on the I Ching is also introduced. The eight basic trigrams Paqua of the I Ching are brought into various passages of our text as symbols for certain inner processes, and further on we shall try to explain the influence resulting from this use of the symbols. For the rest, since Confucianism has a broad common base with Taoism, the union of these two schools of thought did not bring about a loss of coherence. Perhaps it will strike many a European reader as remarkable that there appear... Now, remember, this was a German guy writing in the 30s, so just for context. Okay, and it was translated into English later. Yes, perhaps it will strike many, or maybe it was 1929, many a European reader as remarkable that there appear in the text sayings familiar to him from Christian teaching. Familiar to Confucius? What? Well, on the... Okay, the author of the text. Right. Well, it was written in the 1700s. I think Chinese people in the 1700s were familiar with Christianity. In fact, there are Christian sutras dating all the way back, I don't know exactly how long, but more than 1,000 years for sure. They might not necessarily have been very popular, but they exist. I mean, they're written in the style of Buddhist sutras, and they're written in Chinese, and they're old, and they're basically Roman Catholicism. It's like not like anything interesting like Gnosticism, but it's like the standard mainstream exoteric story of Jesus. For the rest, since Confucius, yes, we read that. Mm-hmm. Familiar to him, Christian teaching. Well, on the other hand, these same well-known things, which, and I think the Pali texts started getting translated, I want to say in the 1500s, or like they're the beginning of kind of the awareness of the ancient Buddhist scriptures. Maybe earlier, but as far as I know, I mean, obviously there was, I don't know if it's obvious, but there were Greeks that were in India at the time that Mahayana Buddhism was new, and then they went back to Greece. And so there were people who had knowledge of Buddhism in Greece 2,000 years ago, for sure. And some that might have, you know, helped influence some of Greek thought back then. But as far as like Shakespeare times, there was an awareness of these things. Like, for example, like George Washington and them, maybe more George Washington times than Shakespeare times, there was some awareness. They were reading a little bit of like ancient Chinese and ancient Indian Buddhism, things like that. So yeah, it's not like just recently. I mean, maybe they had more of a, this is very strange and foreign. You know, maybe they felt even more that way than someone in 1930s Germany felt. But it wasn't totally unknown. So, yeah, there were people in China that knew about Christianity in the 1600s, 1700s, and people in the 13 colonies that knew about the Pali scriptures. So, okay, yeah, if you didn't know. If you don't know, now you know. On the other hand, these same well-known things, which in Europe are very often taken only as ecclesiastical phrasing, are here given quite a different perspective because of the psychological connections in which they are used. We find intuitions and concepts like the following. To select only at random a few that are especially striking, light is the life of man. The eye is the light of the body. Man is spiritually reborn out of water and fire, to which must be added thought, earth, in quotes, in parentheses, spirit, in parentheses. Let's take a moment to just kind of hang out with that, shall we? I don't want to just rush on to something else. Thought, earth, in parentheses, spirit. Okay. As womb. Oh, okay. Which must be added. To which must be added thought earth as womb, or tilled field. Let us compare the sayings of John. Quote, I baptize you with water. After me shall come one who will baptize with the Holy Ghost and with fire. Or, except a man be born of water and of the Spirit, he cannot enter into the kingdom of God. How suggestive, for instance, becomes the thought of water as the seed substance in our text, and how clear the difference between the, quote, outward streaming and, quote, activity, which exhausts itself in begetting, parentheses, what is born of flesh remains flesh, end parentheses, and, quote, backward flowing, end quote, movement, metanoia, in parentheses, okay. The bath, too, plays its part in this rebirth just as it does in the baptism preached by John. John the Baptist, I presume. There's like three Johns. Three main Johns in the Bible. There's the John spoken of in the beginning of the Gospel of John, who's not the same person as the Gospel is attributed to having been written by, which was just sort of arbitrarily like, oh, the beloved disciple. That must be John, right? What was I saying? Yeah, then John of Patmos, three Johns. John the Baptist, baptized, wore a loincloth, ate locusts and honey, and said, hey, Andrew, and the other guy, follow him, right? And then there was John, the one who was the only one at the foot of the cross with Mary. And then there was John, who was imprisoned on Patmos, eating moldy food and hallucinating about Jesus with fiery eyes and a sword coming out of his mouth. Three different Johns. Good to know. I mean, not everybody knows that. You have to kind of look a little bit. So if you hear John, which John are we talking about, right? Where were we? Okay. John and also the Christian baptism. Oh, the bath preached by John and also in the Christian baptism. Does Frederick Wilhelm know what he's talking about? Okay, I'll just keep reading because this isn't about that. Even the mystical marriage, which plays such an important role in Christian parables, appears several times. There is also mentioned the child, the boy within ourselves, parentheses, the puer aeternus, the Christ, who must be born in us and who, in another way, is the bridegroom of the soul, end parentheses. I mean, a lot of these things, I think, are a little more universal. I think it might be a little bit of a narrow view to say, oh, this is Christian influence. See, they're talking about a wedding between a man and a woman as a spiritual idea. You don't have the copyright on that Christianity, you know? Oh, a holy child, an eternal child. Yeah, look everywhere. You'll find that. That's not like, again, there's like, oh, they must be familiar with Christmas. No. Do they know it's Christmas time at all? No, and they don't need to because it's universal, right? That's why they call it Catholic. Catholic is Greek for universal. Never mind. I'll keep reading. And the bride as well. And what is most striking of all, perhaps even an apparently minor detail, the need of having oil in the lamps so that they can burn brightly. Yeah, you need oil in lamps so that they can burn brightly. I mean, that's a thing. That's not a biblical thing. That's a thing. That's like a pre-electricity thing. Takes on a new and weighty psychological meaning in our text. It is worth mentioning that the expression, quote, golden flower, end quote, Chinhua, in an esoteric connection includes the word light. If one writes the two characters one above the other so that they touch, the lower part of the upper character and the upper part of the lower character make the character for light, Kuan. Sorry for my pronunciation. Obviously, this secret sign was invented in a time of persecution, when a veil of deep secrecy was necessary to the further promulgation of the doctrine. That's something that has happened here and there. So it's not unique to esotericism in Europe having to be secret and underground. Apparently in China too. Makes sense. Okay. Thank goodness we live in modern times, right? Where that's less of an issue? Anyway. Okay. That was, in turn, the reason the teachings always remained limited to secret circles. Even today, however, its membership is greater than appears from the outside. Again, 1929, 1930, not 2024. If we ask whence the light religion comes, we can, first of all, consider Persia. As in the Tang period, there were Persian temples in many places in China. But even though certain points correspond with the religion of Zarathustra, hi if you're watching, comment below. It's an inside. Anyway. And especially with Persian mysticism, there are, on the other hand, very strong divergences. Another view to be considered is that of a direct Christian influence. Yeah, I mean, there probably was a direct Christian influence, but marriage and a child, come on, like, yeah, that's Egyptian also, you know, and everywhere else. It's biology, for fuck's sake. Okay. another view to be considered is that, yes, in the Tang period, the religion of a Turkic tribe, the Uyghurs, you've heard about them, haven't you? If you haven't, you must live in China. Who were allied with the emperor was the Nestorian branch of Christianity. Interesting. I mean, I say interesting because it's kind of commonly understood that the Uyghurs of today are Muslim, right? But here Frederick Wilhelm is saying that they were the Nestorian branch of Christianity. It stood in high favor, as is witnessed by the well-known Nestorian monument in Xianfu, erected in 781, and bearing both a Chinese and a Syriac inscription. I'm guessing that's not there anymore. Thus, connections between the Nestorians and the Qin Tan Qiao are quite possible. Timothy Richard went so far as to consider the Qin Tan Qiao simply a survival of the old Nestorians. He was led to this view by certain agreements in ritual and certain traditions of the Qin Tan Qiao membership, which approach closely to Christian practice. Lately, P.Y. Saeki has taken up the theory again and, supported by the Nestorian liturgy found in Tun Huang by Pelliot, has established a series of further parallels. He even goes so far as to identify Lu Yen, the founder of Qin Tan Qiao, with the Adam who wrote the text of the Nestorian monument and signs himself with the Chinese name Lu Tzu Yen. According to this hypothesis, Lu Yen, the founder of the Qin Tan Qiao, would have been a Christian of the Nestorian confession. Saeki goes decidedly too far in his delight in identifications. His proofs are all of them almost convincing, but there is always lacking the crucial point which would clinch the matter. Many partial proofs do not make a whole one. But we must concur with him at least to the extent of agreeing that in the Qin Tan Qiao there has been a strong admixture of Nestorian ideas, which are also evident in the present manuscript. Okay, some of these ideas seem very odd in their strange dress, while others take on a remarkable new sort of vitality. Here we reach one of those points which prove over and over again, Orient und Occident sind nicht mehr zu trennen. Any Germans watching, or bilingual people who speak German? They forgot to translate that into English. Orient means east. Occident means west. Und means and. So east and west. Sind nicht, I'm guessing, are not. Mehr zu trennen. Mehr zu trennen. Editor Edward, could you translate that for us?
According to the footnote, about an inch and a half from the German text in question, it says, East and West can no longer be kept apart. And the quote is from Goethe.
All right. Thank you, Editor Edward. He's very helpful at times. I don't use him as much as I should. Partly because, you know, I don't want to take away too much time from real life. I mean, you know, this hobby, this is a hobby, by the way, if you were wondering, making these things. Like, we, Edward and I, and BT and Pymander, when he comes, consider this a form of artistic expression. In fact, just earlier today, Edward was talking to his wife, Priyal. Edward's me without the hat. Hi, guys. Hope you're doing well. Okay, back to Gwydion. So, yeah, that's Edward. He was talking to his wife earlier, talking about his art, referring to chicken philosophy. He hasn't been painting very much lately. So that's where we're going to close today. Next time, we're going to get on to number two of this introduction, and maybe by part six, or if whoever's up next does nothing but read, then maybe by the end of part five we'll get to the actual translation. Thank you for your patience as we trudge our way through these introductions. I often skip introductions, or in the case of Ashtavakra Gita, we read them at the end. The trip to Shanghai that Edward did to, you know, see where his dad was born and all that. I'll go over to the French Quarter where they lived and see the propaganda museum. It's over there. And, you know, just walk around, be there, breathe the air. Be able to say, okay, I was there. And then look at pictures from back then and pictures of now and be like, yep, it's very different. That trip was in 2018, September. Went there for my our 40th birthday. We are currently 45, turning 46 this year, if you were wondering. A little old, right at the end of Gen X. And yeah, so for the 40th birthday, went to Shanghai, spent, I think, two weeks in Shanghai, and made a video, and that's where that clip that you saw earlier of the temple came from. And so if you enjoyed that little clip and you think you might enjoy, like, spending, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes, I don't remember how long that video is, watching the whole video, just a little bit of introduction. So, okay, I was in India, came to India, met Priyal, right? And I was like, I wanna marry you and settle in India and live here forever and be with you forever, and I love you, and I'll just be right back. I'm gonna go to California and you know, take care of some things I gotta take care of there. I don't know how long it's going to take, maybe 3 months, maybe 6 months, hopefully no longer than that, and I'll pack all my stuff and send it to India. And she was like, I really want to believe you. I really want to believe you. But I can't quite 100% believe you. Like, guys have fucked her over before in the past. And a foreigner coming to India and then, you know, having this intense relationship and then saying, I'll be right back in 6 months. I got to go home to get it. She's like, I'm just afraid you're going to get there and be like, call me up and say, you know what? I changed my mind. I'm just going to stay here. And I was like, what can I do to assure you? You know, and all this. And so there's this song and these guys at the chemist, that's what they call pharmacies here. I think it's an old British thing. One time we went in to the chemist and the guys were looking at each other and then they put this song on. And it's this Bollywood song from old Bollywood, 70s, I guess. I don't know exactly when. And it's a woman singing, don't look a foreigner in the eye. Because they'll love you and then they'll leave you, basically. And Pew was like looking at the guys and they were like, and she was so pissed, you know, at these guys. What's the word? Bullying, you know, like teasing, heckling us just as we're living our lives, right? And so anyway, so the Shanghai video, this is related to the Shanghai. The Shanghai video starts in Dehradun, which is kind of where she grew up. She was started out in Bihar, where the Buddha's from, which I find that very, you know, I'm very proud of the fact that she comes from where the Buddha's, well, where he did most of his work in Bihar. Of course, he was born in Lumini. And where Jainism and all that, there were a lot of holy stuff, a lot of the old Sramana traditions in, you know, are based in Bihar, what's now called Bihar. And anyway, so, but then when she was like a teenager, they all moved to Dehradun, which is near Rishikesh. So George Harrison from the Beatles made a song called Dehradun. And so the Shanghai video that I'm going to point you to starts out with George Harrison singing Dehradun, but it's not the actual Beatles recording because the Beatles block people from being able to use their recordings on YouTube. And it's someone else playing the music, but it's George Harrison's voice. Anyway, that lasts for like 30 seconds. And then you see me like leaving India, and then there's this Bollywood song playing. That's the one. Don't look a foreigner in the eye because they'll love you and leave you. And you'll be crying, you know, that kind of thing. And then you see me arrive in Shanghai, and the mood is very somber and sad because I don't know how long it's going to be before I see Pew again. So there's like a personal, like with some of these Chicken Philosophy episodes, it's like not just about the subject. It's not just, you know, a documentary about Shanghai, and I'm not just doing an audiobook of Secret of the Golden Flower. I'm also sharing with you what it represents to me in my life and why I'm reading it and things like that. And kind of even being a little bit vulnerable and, you know, showing you, yeah, I'm a little bit sensitive about the fact that people, you know, turn their nose up at the fact that I'm interested in Chinese things and for whatever reason, when I grew up surrounded by Chinese things. And anyway, what was I saying? So the mood in Shanghai, once I arrive in Shanghai, like four minutes into a 20-minute video, the mood is very, very somber. And then it gradually improves and as we get toward my birthday and the music changes and what we see changes. We go to Chinese temples and then kind of see more of the sort of the typical, like, oh, look, skyscrapers, you know, kind of lights and stuff in Shanghai. So if you're interested in that, I think that might be a good follow-up to this. And I will go ahead and point now. There's the link. Go ahead and click it. Bye. Bye.